Louisa had not slept all that night. For hour after hour, while the Mew rolled and surged and snubbed against her anchor cable, and the storm howled relentlessly through the rigging, she had crouched under the gun carriage, working away with the file. She had padded the chain links with the canvas bag to deaden the scraping sound of metal against metal, but the file handle had raised a blister in her palm. When it burst, she had to use the bag to cushion the raw flesh. The first pale light of dawn showed through the chink in the port lid, and there was only a thin sliver of metal holding the chain link when she lifted her head and heard the unmistakable sounds of the anchor cable being hauled in, the stamp of the bare feet of the sailors working at the windlass on the deck above her. Then, faintly, she heard the shouted orders of the officers on the main deck and the rush of feet to the masts as men went aloft in the storm. "We're sailing!" The word was passed along the gun deck, and women cursed their misfortune, or shouted abuse at the captain and his crew on the deck above, or at God, as their mood dictated. The respite was over. All the tribulations of making passage in this hell ship were about to begin again. They felt the altered motion of the hull as the anchor flukes broke out of the mud bottom, and the ship came alive to begin her struggle with the raging elements. A dark, bitter anger swept over Louisa. Salvation had seemed so close. She crept to the chink in the port lid. The light was too poor, and the spray and rain were too thick to allow her more than a dim glimpse of the distant land. "It is still close," she told herself. "By God's grace I might reach it." But in her heart she knew that across those miles of storm-driven sea the shore was far beyond her reach. Even if she managed to shed her leg irons, climb out through the gunport and leap overboard, there was no chance of her surviving more than a few minutes before she was driven under. She knew that Jim Courtney could not be there to rescue her. "Better to go quickly by drowning," she told herself, "than to rot away in this lice-infested hell." Frenziedly, she sawed at the last sliver of steel that held the chain-link closed. Around her, the other prisoners were screaming and howling as they were thrown about mercilessly. Close-hauled against the gale, the ship pitched and rolled wildly. Louisa forced herself not to look up from her work. Just a few strokes more of the file, the link parted, and her chains fell to the deck. Louisa wasted only a minute to massage her swollen, galled ankles. Then she crawled back under the cannon and took out the horn-handled knife from where she had hidden it. "Nobody must try to stop me," she whispered grimly. She crawled back to the gunport and prized loose the shackle of the lock. Then she tucked the knife into the pouch under her skirt. She wedged her back against the gun carriage and tried to force open the port lid. The ship was on the starboard tack, and the heel of the deck was against her. With all her strength behind it, she could push the heavy port lid open only a few inches, and when she achieved this, a solid jet of salt water spurted through the crack. She had to let it slam closed again. "Help me! Help me get the port lid open!" she called desperately to her three allies among the prisoners. They stared back at her with dull, bovine expressions. They would rouse themselves to help her only if their own survival depended on it. Between waves, Louisa stole another quick glance through the chink of the port lid and saw the dark shape of the island not far ahead. "We will be forced to tack now," she thought, "or we will be driven aground." Over the months aboard, she had picked up a working knowledge and understanding of the ship's navigation and handling. "On the other tack, I will have the heel of the hull to help me get it open." She crouched, ready, and at last felt the bows coming up into the wind. The motion of the hull changed under her. Even above the keening of the wind, she heard from the deck above the faint bellowing of orders and the running of frantic feet. She braced herself for the heel of the deck onto the opposite tack. But it did not happen, and the ship rolled with a heavy slack motion, dead in the water. One of the other prisoners, whose putative husband had been a bosun on a VOC Indiaman, shouted with rising panic, "Stupid pig of a captain has missed stays! Sweet Jesus, we're in irons!" Louisa knew what that meant. Head to the wind, the ship had lost her way through the water, and now she could not pay off on the other tack. She was pinned down helplessly before the storm. "Listen!" the woman screamed. Then, above the din of the storm, they all heard it coming. "Squall! She's going to lay us over!" They crouched helplessly in their chains and listened to it grow louder. The shriek of the approaching squall deafened them, and when it seemed that it could not rise higher, it struck the ship. She reeled and staggered and went over like a bull elephant shot through the heart. They were stunned by the crackling uproar of breaking rigging, then the cannon shot of the mainstay parting under the strain. The howl went on over until the gun deck was vertical, and tackle, gear, and human beings slid down the slope until they piled up against the hull. Loose iron cannonballs slammed into the piles of struggling prisoners. Women were shrieking with pain and terror. One of the iron balls came rolling down the slanting deck towards where Louisa clung to her gun carriage. At the last moment she threw herself aside, and the cannonball hit the woman who crouched beside her. Louisa heard the bones in both her legs shatter. The woman sat and stared at the tangle of her own limbs with an expression of astonishment. One of the great guns, 9 tons of cast bronze, broke out of its tackle and came hurtling down the deck. It crushed the struggling women who lay in its path as though they were rabbits under the wheels of a chariot. Then it struck the hull. Even the massive oaken planking could not check its charge. It burst through and was gone. The sea poured through the splintered opening and swamped the gun deck under an icy green wave. Louisa held her breath and clung to the gun carriage as she was engulfed. Then she felt the howl begin to right itself as the squall raced past and relinquished its grip on the ship. The water poured out through the gaping hole in the side of the hull and sucked out a struggling, screaming knot of women. As they dropped into the sea, their chains dragged them under instantly. Still clinging to her gun carriage, Louisa could look out of the gaping wound in the ship's side as though it were an open doorway. She saw the broken mast, the tangled ropes and canvas hanging down into the churning water from the deck above. She saw the bobbing heads of the seamen who had been swept over the side with the wreckage. Then beyond it, she saw the shore of Africa and the high surf bursting upon its beaches like volleys of cannon fire. The crippled ship was drifting down upon it, driven on by the gale. She watched the inexorable progress, terror mingled with burgeoning hope. With every second that passed, the shore was drawing closer, and the runaway cannon had smashed open an escape hatch for her. Even through the driving rain and spray, she could make out features on the shore, trees bending and dancing in the wind, a scattering of whitewashed buildings set back from the beach. Closer and closer the stricken ship drifted in, and now she could make out tiny human figures. They were coming from the town, scurrying along the edge of the beach, some waving their arms, but if they were shouting, their voices could not carry against that terrible wind. Now the ship was close enough for Louisa to tell the difference between man, woman, and child in the gathering throng of spectators. It took an immense effort for her to force herself to leave her place of safety behind the gun carriage, but she began to crawl along the heaving deck over the shattered human bodies and sodden equipment. Cannonballs still rolled aimlessly back and forth, heavy enough to crush her bones, and she dodged those that trundled towards her. She reached the hole in the hull. It was wide enough for a horse to gallop through. She clung to the splintered planks and peered through the spray and the breaking surf at the beach. Her father had taught her to tread water and to swim in a doggy paddle in the lake at Mooi Uitzig. With his encouragement as he swam beside her, she had once succeeded in crossing from one side of the lake to the other. This was different. She knew she could keep afloat only for a few seconds in this maelstrom of crazed surf. The shore was so close now that she could make out the expressions of the spectators who waited for the ship to strike. Some were laughing with excitement. 2 or 3 children were dancing and waving their arms above their heads. None showed any compassion or pity for the death struggle of a great ship and the mortal predicament of those aboard her. For them this was a Roman circus, with the prospect of profit from salvaging the wreckage as it washed ashore. From the direction of the castle she saw a file of soldiers come down the beach at a dog trot. A mounted officer in a fine uniform was leading them. She could see his insignia glinting in his green and yellow jacket, even in this dull light. She knew that even if she succeeded in reaching the shore, the soldiers would be waiting for her. There was a fresh chorus of screams and heart-stopping cries from the women around her as they felt the vessel touch the bottom. The ship tore herself free and drifted on, only to touch again, the impact shivering the timbers of the hull. This time, she stuck fast, pinned down on the sands, and the waves charged at her like rank after rank of a monstrous cavalry, the ship could not yield to their assault, and each wave struck with a malicious boom and a high white fountain of foam. Slowly the hull rolled over, and her starboard side came uppermost. Louisa scrambled out through the jagged opening. She stood upright on the high side of the heavily canted hull. The wind flung out her long yellow hair in a tangle and flattened the threadbare canvas shift against her thin body. The wet cloth emphasized the thrust of her breasts, which were full and round. She gazed towards the beach, saw the heads of the sailors who had abandoned the ship bobbing in the wild waters. One reached the shallows and stood up, only to be knocked flat by the next wave. Through the hole in the hull, three other convicts followed her out. But as they clung to the planking, their leg irons slowed their movements. Another wave swept the hull, and Louisa grabbed one of the shrouds from the mainmast, which dangled close by. The waters swirled round her waist, but she clung on. When the wave receded, all three of the other women were gone, drawn instantly under the green water by their chains. Using the shroud, Louisa pulled herself to her feet again. The spectators were galvanized by the sight of her, seemingly rising like Aphrodite from the waves. She was so young and lovely, and in such mortal danger. This was better than any flogging or execution on the parade ground of the castle. They danced and waved and shouted. Their voices were faint, but in the lull in the wind she could make out their cries. "Jump, Maisie! Swim! Let's see you swim! Better than a jail cell, Pushy!" She could see the sadistic excitement on their faces, and hear the cruelty in their voices. She knew that there was no promise of help to be had from them. She raised her face to the sky, and at that moment a movement caught her eye. A horse and rider had appeared on the crest of the dune overlooking the stricken ship. The horse was a magnificent bay stallion. The rider sat astride the bare back. He had stripped off all his clothing except a breech clout knotted round his waist. His torso was pale as porcelain, but his strong young arms were tanned by the sun to the colour of fine leather, and his dense dark curls danced in the wind. He gazed back at her across the beach and the booming surf, and suddenly he raised his arm above his head and waved at her. Then she recognised him. Wildly she waved back and screamed his name. "Jim! Jim Courtney!"